Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Tyler, the host of the Unleashing Deep In podcast, and I am super excited that we are back for episode 15 of the pod. And this week, we've got a really special guest. We have David from Glow. David has been a builder in the space for quite a long time. I think we'll maybe talk about that just a little bit, but I'm really excited. You're doing some really interesting things sort of in the environmental space with relationship to Deep In. And so welcome on. I'm excited to get a chance to chat. This is a space that I am definitely coming up to speed on. So I'm really excited to get a chance to learn from you a little bit. But David, welcome to the pod.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So maybe for a level set for folks who don't know who you are quite yet, if you could give a quick introduction about yourself, kind of how long you've been in the space, what you've been doing, and then talk about how you got into Glow, that'd be a great place to start it off.
Sure. So I'm David Warwick. I've been doing crypto since 2011. My very first project was called BitHopper. I was actually a junior dev with another guy named Colin. And so, yeah, I mined my first Bitcoin at $1.50. It's been a long journey, a lot of cycles, and in 2014, I launched Ziacoin, which is a decentralized storage platform that hit a $3 billion market cap. We launched Skynet in 2020, that got 2 million monthly active users, and in 2017, we actually made our own mining machines. We made our own mining ASICs for Cyan Decred. The company was called Obelisk. And we shipped more than 20,000 machines to customers. So I've definitely been around the circuit. And crypto, especially in the 2022, 2021, post FTX, was just it was a rough time. And I kind of had this losing the magic moment where it's the Lightning Network is still under development, and Ethereum still mostly a casino, and Cyan Filecoin both hadn't really promised on decentralized storage, and Helium, had very little demand. Akash had not a ton of demand. And so I was what are we doing? Where's the industry going? And what's best about crypto? And how can we go from a place where we're mostly not doing real world things to getting over that hump? And so that's kind of how I found Glow. Is I sat back and I asked myself, what's crypto really good at? And I came up with two answers. The first one was, crypto is really good at deploying infrastructure. And if you look at Bitcoin and how many Bitcoin miners there are, if you look at Filecoin and how many terabytes hard drives there are, or Chia, which has actually even more storage than Filecoin, or Helium, which has a million network hotspots that got deployed, there's all this evidence that crypto is really exceptional at rolling out massive amounts of infrastructure. And then the second thing that crypto is really good at is motivating people and bringing people together as a community. And so owning a token binds people together in a way that owning stock or donating to a charity or no other community, I think, has a binding force as strong as token communities. And so I think if you can combine... So the question to me was how can I combine, the strength of crypto's ability to roll out infrastructure with the passion of crypto communities, and then also avoid this really big problem that crypto has, which is engineering. You look at any crypto project, engineering is usually the bottleneck. Everyone's waiting for, the engineers to write code. That's how Saya always was. It was never a product problem. It was always we have to, spend 3 months to write this feature that, clearly everybody needs. And Filecoin's the same way. The Lightning Network's been 7 years of engineering. When you think it took, 4 or 5 years for Ethereum to transition from proof of work to proof of stake, that just shows you it requires a lot of building. And so I also wanted to find a project that had a very tiny engineering footprint. And I didn't want to do, another distributed system. I didn't want to be in zero knowledge. I was what can we do that's just really easy? And that's how I ended up on solar and carbon credits. Is solar farms are infrastructure. Crypto is really good at rolling out infrastructure. Carbon credits are something that people are super passionate about. And if you're going to bind a community together and get them to tackle a real world problem together, global warming is actually a really tangible problem that a lot of people already care a ton about. And so that felt like a sweet spot. And then finally, on the engineering side, Glow is pretty much just counting how much carbon credits are produced by each solar farm. So the more I looked at these three things, and the more I started to play around with Glow and figure out how we can optimize the finances and make it easier to run a solar farm and make it more profitable to run a solar farm, the more I got excited, the more I started to feel like Glow is the next thing. And at this point, I am super excited, and I think Glow is you know, the best opportunity that I've ever had the pleasure of pursuing.
That's incredible. Yeah, your backstory, I'm sure it's getting a lot of people very intrigued, because you've been, not only have you been in the space, but you've sort of, you were in Deepin before Deepin was what it is now, before the term was coined, and doing all these things back since 2014. I mean, that's almost a decade run. And it's amazing to hear about all those pain points and lessons learned. I haven't been in crypto that long, but I definitely can empathize with a lot of these pain points that we talk about, these huge engineering bottlenecks, trying to get network effect and adoption. And a lot of these things can be really, really challenging. And so to hear that you've taken those learnings and sort of apply them into Glow is both pragmatic, really smart, and very, very interesting to hear about that sort of story arc. But can you give the audience who's listening kind of a 500-foot overview of what Glow is and what you're actually building with carbon credits and sort of putting the environmental impacts and considerations into this product offering?
Yeah. So one of the like big places we started was just analyzing the existing carbon credit industry and asking, like, what's the goal? And what's the best way to achieve that goal? And I think I ended up disagreeing with basically the entire carbon credit industry. And the more you dive into it, the more insubstantial and almost like scammy all existing carbon credits feel. And that's definitely not what people want. Like global warming is a real problem. People want to throw real money at it. And they want to know that when, you know, if they throw money at solving climate change, they want to know that that money is going to do something real. And so we ended up in like a very different place than I think the rest of the carbon credit industry. And we have like this super fresh, unique approach to solving climate change. And so the first place that we start is like solar is good. 40% of all global emissions come from coal and natural gas power plants. And when you think about the transportation fleet, all of our cars and trucks switching to electric, that's actually going to go up to 60%. And so if you want to make a big dent in global warming, one of the easiest things that you can focus on is just migrating the world to clean power. And so from that perspective, solar was like very clearly this obvious good. So it's like Glow is about increasing the amount of solar in the world. But more than that, a lot of like renewable energy programs focus on increasing the amount of renewable energy, but that's not actually what solves climate change. If you think the global landscape that we have today, and we leave all the coal and natural gas power plants in place, and then we add 10x as much solar, we haven't solved global warming because those coal and natural gas power plants are still polluting just as much as they were before. And so sure, the world is now 90% clean energy, but there's just as much bad energy as there was before, and we haven't solved any problems. So Glow is very specifically focused on like removing or deleting or outcompeting, like crowding out, I think is probably a better way to put it. We're explicitly crowding out and suffocating coal and natural gas power plants. And so Glow doesn't reward you for putting down solar farms. Instead, it rewards you for putting down solar farms that are directly competing and crowding out coal and natural gas power plants. And so from a 500,000 foot view or a 500 foot view, what Glow does is it gives tokens and cash rewards to solar farms that crowd out or displace dirty energy created by coal and natural gas power plants. And the amount of cash rewards you get is proportional to the amount of carbon credits you produce. The amount of tokens you get is proportional to the amount of electricity revenue you produce. And so there's one key bit of Glow that like really ties everything together that I haven't mentioned, which is that we want to make sure that if you have a solar farm that's earning carbon credits, that solar farm is like 100% committed. It's all in committed to climate change. So Glow captures that electricity revenue, and it requires you to use all of your electricity revenue, or your electricity value, more correctly, take that electricity value and use it to reward other solar farms for producing carbon credits. And so at like a high level, one way to think of GLOW is almost like a fund of sorts, where it takes carbon credit money, or, you know, donations for carbon credits, and it uses that to buy solar farms. And then as those solar farms produce electricity, it sells the electricity, and then it uses the money it gets to buy even more solar farms. And then the tokens become a component of that as well. As the tokens gain value, the purchasing power of this entity or this fund grows, and it can buy more solar farms. And then those solar farms produce more electricity revenue, and you get this like really nice snowball. And so GLOW is designed as like, if you are holding GLOW tokens, if you buy carbon credits, any way that you participate, you're increasing the amount of proliferation of solar in the world. And specifically, it's solar that's targeting dirty energy and trying to crowd out and shut down all of these polluting power plants.
Wow. That's an amazing overview, and also an incredible problem that you guys are solving, that I think people, a lot of times everybody talks about, climate change and some of the different components to it, but you guys are being very pragmatic, because you've not only recognized that the system that is set up is almost sort of undermining the problem that it's trying to solve. And you mentioned kind of the scaminess of it. I'd love for you to, if you could dive into that just a little bit. And then also for those who are maybe unfamiliar with what a carbon credit is, can you talk through what that is in fact, and sort of how that plays into the current world? And then also what you're doing at the protocol level with GLOW specifically?
Yeah. So the idea behind a carbon credit, in like the theoretically perfect carbon credit, is that it represents one metric ton of carbon dioxide that is not in the atmosphere, that would otherwise be in the atmosphere. And so if I go out and I buy 1,000 carbon credits, that means that a whole bunch of carbon dioxide, which is contributing to global warming, is not in the atmosphere anymore. And so at like a theoretical level, carbon credits are pretty simple. At a practical level, there are 6,000 different ways. I think more realistically, it's like 2,000 different ways to make carbon credits. They're all recognized differently by different governments or different programs, different regions. And because there are 2,000 ways to make them, and these things are super valuable, so if you can build a good story around a carbon credit, you can sell it for as much as, the highest price carbon credits are $2,000 per metric ton of CO2. And so if you can lie about how many tons of CO2 you've produced, you can make a ton of money. So if carbon credits, if you can like invent a forest, or invent a technique that people believe that fabricates a ton of carbon credits, you can make a ton of money doing that. And when you have 2,000 different methodologies around the world for establishing that a carbon credit exists, you get a lot of people who kind of deep dive that list and try and find ways to game the system. And so most carbon credits, the more you look at them, the more you lose confidence that they're real. The carbon credit giants today are Verra and Gold Standard, and both of them have taken a lot of hits. There were in, I think it was 2021 and 2022, there's a big push to do all these reforestation carbon credits. And so there's a famous news article where Brazil accepted a ton of money to stop cutting down trees in a particular forest. What happened is all the loggers just went to a different forest. And so the total, when you looked at satellite imagery over the next year, the total amount of deforestation in Brazil stayed the same, and Brazil received, I think it was like hundreds of millions of dollars, wow, in carbon credit revenue for effectively not helping global warming at all. All they did was they relocated loggers from one place to another instead of shutting down their logging industry. And so that was a huge scandal, and things like this appear all over the place. And so there are, again, a bunch of different ways to produce carbon credits. And the more you scrutinize them, the more you realize a lot of them are not very good. And in fact, you start to wonder if any of them are very good. And so one of the ways that GLOW like really distinguishes itself from Verra and Gold Standard and these other legacy players in the carbon credit space is we focus on exactly one way to produce carbon credits, which is you put a solar farm down, and then a human will go and audit the solar farm, make sure it's real. We collect real grid data, so we understand which power plants that solar farm is competing with and when they're turning off. And we issue carbon credits based on the actual emissions data from those power plants. And by having just one methodology, that makes it a lot harder for scammers to slip in because all eyes are in one place. Whereas when you go to like Verra, who I think they have like 600 or something, somewhere in that ballpark, 600 methodologies that they support, how many experts are looking at each individual methodology? The answer is probably zero, right? The methodology was created and then nobody is actively monitoring all the projects under that methodology. Whereas with Glow, if we have 20 experts in the carbon credit space, all 20 experts are thinking about ways to defraud this one methodology. And so the amount of scrutiny is way higher. The focus is way narrower. And that doesn't hurt scalability. Like I mentioned, we could scale to 40% and in the future, potentially 60% of all global emissions being eliminated using just this one method. So Glow is, again, like a super pragmatic, super focused, and like highly different way of looking at things from most of the rest of the carbon credit space.
Yeah, that's incredible. Do you, just for context for everybody, do you have metrics around how large the carbon credit market is? And if you were to just speculate, what percentage of that is sort of BS?
So some studies have suggested that it's as much as 90% BS. I think the optimistic studies are like 50 to 60% and the critical studies are 90%. So I would guess that the reality is probably 75 to 80%, which is a terrible number. And everybody knows this. These aren't controversial figures. If you go to the largest carbon credit buyers in the world and you ask them, how much fraud do you think they do? Do they think that they purchase? They'll readily admit, like, probably a lot. They're like, we don't have great options and we're doing what we can. And we know that we're probably buying a lot of fraud. And spending a lot of money on fraudsters. And so the whole carbon credit industry is kind of unhappy about where it's at. And that's one of the reasons why. So the carbon credit industry is divided into two segments. There's the voluntary segment and there's the mandatory segment. The voluntary segment is companies like Microsoft. Microsoft has a huge carbon credit program and they're actually one of the most sophisticated buyers in the space. Microsoft probably buys a lot less fraud and junk than other players because they look very carefully look at everything they purchase. And they're like one of the most thoughtful teams on the planet, but the reason that Microsoft buys carbon credits is actually because it improves employee retention. And so they found that their workforce is happier with them and like just sleeps with a better conscience and feels more motivated to work for Microsoft, knowing that Microsoft has a really effective carbon credit program. And so you have this voluntary side of the world, which is people spending money either for PR reasons or employee retention reasons or just to feel good. Then you have the mandatory side of the world, which is when the government says you have to buy carbon credits or you go to jail, or you have to buy carbon credits or I will shut down your business. And so the voluntary side of the world used to be about $10 billion a year. After all the scandals and fraud and all the scrutiny, it's down to about $2 billion a year. But I think that actually it's probably a $50 to $100 billion market. It's just that there's so much controversy and fraud and people are afraid to put money into it because they don't believe that the money is actually useful, which in most cases, it's probably not useful. And so I think that carbon credits industry's own reputation is really suppressing it. And I would speculate that natural demand is probably, you know, easily 10x, maybe 50x. What the market says today, and again, that's just because a lot of the players are actively choosing not to participate because they don't have faith. And then the mandatory side of the carbon credit market is $1 trillion a year.
Wow. So
the UN spends something like $700 billion a year between California and the East Coast. I think the US is spending something like $120 billion a year, and then China's spending something like $300 billion a year. So between China, the UN, and the US, you get close to or over $1 trillion per year buying carbon credits. And so, and if I recall correctly, I'm a little bit less confident in this statistic, but I think it's about 5 to 10 billion carbon credits per year that this money is buying. And The average price is about $70 on the mandatory side. So you can do that math.
Yeah.
And Glow can scale in theory to 20 or 30 billion carbon credits per year. So you multiply, $70 times 30 billion, and you get a lot of market size.
Yeah, it's a huge market. I had no idea that it was that big. And the differentiation between the mandatory and sort of the voluntary side is an interesting statistic. And you hear, I mean, I always go on, you get a Google and you see, we've been carbon neutral since this date. And you know that the carbon credit system is more or less the reality is that's why they are quote unquote carbon neutral is because of these carbon credits. From my understanding, you probably have better insight there than that's incredible. So how do the carbon credits then fit into the Glow protocol? And this is some of my naivete, but when you're talking at a global scale, are there sort of different versions of these credits that you have in the United States versus the UN, for example, and how does that fit into your guys' protocol as well?
Yeah, so every carbon credit is like totally different. And depending on whether you're in the UN or in California or Massachusetts or Texas or China or India, all these jurisdictions have carbon credit programs and all the requirements look completely different from each other. And I think the main reason that this is happening is because there is no quality standard. Everyone looks at all the other standards that everyone's trying and is like, that's crap. We're going to try our own thing. And then they end up not doing so well either. But the reason I think that the carbon credit space is so fragmented and that there are so many different rules is because no one's come forward with something like a really believable story that survives a ton of scrutiny. And so I actually see this as like a major opportunity. I think if Glow can step up and show this is the right way to do things, you'll actually get a lot of programs restructuring to incorporate Glow and say Glow carbon credits are cool. And really what's missing is confidence. And so like the most important thing to me for the Glow protocol is to make it easy to be confident in the Glow carbon credit. And so that means making sure that the scrutiny is there, making sure that like explorers and guides are there, making sure it's really easy to understand, and like making sure that any fraud events, because there will be fraud no matter what, people will always find a way to get through the cracks and create fraud. And so, but it's having a good understanding of how much fraud there is. It's having a good understanding that, you're catching most of it, that fraud's expensive. And so I think if we can build confidence and get from like 80% fraud down to say 5% fraud, I would be super happy if Glow's at 5% fraud. And that sounds like a lot, but in terms of like real world impact, it means 95% of the money you're spending is having real effects and is doing real good for the world. That's kind of how I think Glow can fit into the global picture.
Got it. Can you give sort of a deep dive into some of the other components with the Glow protocol and how that fits into your business model at a more broad level?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm like most excited about for Glow is the way that the carbon credits reinforce the token economy. And so when someone like, say, the UN buys carbon credits from Glow, this is financially equivalent. There's a couple of steps. There's a couple of layers of abstraction. But basically what they are doing is they are buying and burning Glow tokens. And so if Glow can convince a major player like, say, the UN to come in and buy $100 billion a year of Glow tokens, of carbon credits, Glow is going to have a buy and burn pressure of $300 million a day that is propping up the value of the Glow token. And of course, what that does is that, solar farms earn Glow tokens. It dramatically increases the amount of value that solar farms are able to capture, and it increases the incentive. And so that $300 million a day in Glow tokens being burned turns into, several billion dollars a day in solar farms being deployed in the world, producing carbon credits. And so I think that's kind of like the like crux of the Glow protocol is that we connected the token with the carbon credit in this very like synergistic way. So every Glow token holder is motivated to help Glow sell its carbon credits.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. One of the aspects to your approach is you have these things called impact points. Can you talk about what that is and how that fits into the broader picture as well?
Yeah. So one of the things that started to really bother me about the carbon credit space, the more I got into it, especially like once I was like 6 to 9 months into really deep research in the carbon credit space, that everyone is focused on their own carbon footprint. They're like, let's get ourselves down to zero. But the problem is, like, I think we can cleanly segment the world into like the good guys and bad guys. You have like the Microsofts of the world, then you have the Nestles of the world. And the Nestles of the world really, like, they don't care about carbon credits. They'll do what the government requires them to do, but they're never going to get to zero. They're going to find every loophole they can. And so they're going to be polluting no matter what. And so you cannot win a fight by convincing the good guys to get to zero, because the bad guys will just run rampant and continue to emit carbon and screw up the planet. And so the good guys have to go beyond themselves, and we have to like go to war, essentially. And so where everyone else is focused on like tons of CO2 and like just trying to get themselves to neutral, we focus on impact and impact points. And we recognize that, like, especially as research continues and you know, carbon credits get cheaper or carbon credits get more difficult, like if we get all the low-hanging fruit, the value of a carbon credit is going to move around, but your dollars still have impact no matter when you deploy them. And so we, rather than focusing on direct tons of CO2, we say you can purchase impact points. All of your money will go into propping up this solar network. It'll produce carbon credits in the future. And so we essentially evaluate you as either a person or as a company based on how many impact points you've purchased. And so an impact point is basically saying, I don't care what my own footprint is. My goal is not to get to zero. My goal is to, you know, meaningfully change the world. And so, for example, if every single individual on the planet spends $5 a month contributing to GLOW, we can get rid of all coal and natural gas on the order of like 3 years.
Wow.
Obviously 7 billion people is a lot of people. So GLOW has a bunch of different like plans that essentially embrace either you as an individual or you as a company. So, and we haven't rolled this product out yet. You can be on the lookout for probably around February is when it'll roll out. But we think that if you're an individual, $5 a month is the right contribution, regardless of what your footprint is. If everyone's contributing $5 a month, GLOW can make a huge difference in the world. And then if you're a company, we actually think companies have much bigger budgets to work with. So in order for a company to be kind of blessed by the GLOW Green standard that we came up with, they have to buy $20 of carbon credits, or $20 of impact points, sorry, $20 per month per employee. And so a 10-person company would have to subscribe for $200 a month to accumulate impact points. And then, of course, you get an impact score. So if you go above and beyond that, you'll just get more and more impact points, and there'll be leaderboards, and you can see, you know, how your favorite influencers stack up or how your favorite brands stack up. And we can, you know, we can have a friendly competition where brands try and be the strongest brand or the most, you know, the most impactful brand. And then as these brands compete with each other for, you know, fame and clout, what happens is we just roll out more and more solar and progressively crush coal and natural gas out of existence.
Yeah, I love the gamification aspect of it, because there's certainly a big push and motivation for people to want to compete for something that they're passionate about, something that we all should care about, which is the, you know, the longevity of our environment. But it's so great to hear that that's part of your approach, because my very cursory understanding of carbon credits is it's sort of people are you're not actually solving the problem, because you've got companies like Nestle, as you said, where they're creating as much pollution, but they're just playing this sleight of hand game where they're offsetting it by these carbon credits. And so to actually implement a mechanism that is intentional around actual creating positive externalities seems like such a step forward, even over and above everything else that you've got working on. That is just, that part alone is really amazing to hear that that's what you guys are building.
Yeah. And it came out of, I guess, just frustration. The more I learned about carbon credits, the more frustrated I got with how the industry was set up. And I just felt like this isn't the way that you change the world. If you want to really make a difference, you have to people have to feel like they're going to war against this like big evil that's causing a lot of damage to the planet. And so GLOW is really structured around this idea of like, you have to be bigger than yourself. You have to, you know, make a difference for society. And that means stepping up in a way that is not just about yourself. It's about everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are undertaking a huge mission, and I imagine there's a lot of sort of collective efforts that have to go into pushing what you're trying to do forward. Do you have any partnerships or any other organizations that you're currently working with as you're rolling out the GLOW protocol here in the coming months? And is that something that you're able to talk about a little bit?
Yes, I can talk about a couple of companies in the space. So GLOW International is the company that I run. GLOW International is mostly focused on development and education. We wrote most of the code that's on the EVM. And then we are also, you know, teaching people kind of like this podcast about how everything works. GLOW Solutions is a totally separate company that focuses on rolling out solar farms. Their main focus is residential solar farms. So if you have a home with a roof that doesn't have solar panels on it and you want to participate in GLOW, you want to get token rewards and cash rewards, glowsolutions.org is a good place to go and check it out. And then beyond that, we have, there's a company that has been set up. I forget the name. I want to say it's like Aurora. I know Aria. Maybe it's Aria. Aria that has been set up to audit solar farms and maintain the integrity of the GLOW protocol. And then there are more solar companies that are getting involved. I don't think any of them are ready. Well, we have a couple partners, like Energy Solutions is one. And then another one is called Elios. It's a big fund that funds, multi-gigawatt solar systems. So they're getting involved in GLOW and looking for ways to onboard commercial farms. But overall, everything is just, it's growing, and there's a lot of interest, I would say, especially in the solar world, on figuring out how to participate, how to collect those rewards. And also kind of, so I haven't mentioned this yet, but the carbon credit industry stopped seeing solar as a valuable source of carbon credits when solar became commercially viable. And there's kind of a convoluted history to this, but basically what happened was Barra said, solar farms make money now. Why are we giving them carbon credits? They'll just be competitive in the marketplace on their own, which of course is like, not really how economics works, right? It's like, sure, solar farms are viable in some places, but not others. You want to make sure, like, if our goal is to defeat coal, we can't just let solar be on its own. We have to help it. And so there's a lot of, like, I guess, angst almost in the solar industry of people who are like, we joined solar to do a good thing for the world. And this $1 trillion carbon credit industry is saying that we're just a bunch of, we're a pack of businessmen who want to make as much money as possible, which is not strictly wrong. It is a pack of businessmen who want to make a bunch of money, but they also are like really motivated to do good for the world, and they feel slighted that their contributions don't count. And so GLOW is stepping up and giving them a way to, like, this is a way to make your contributions count. You have to give up your electricity revenue, but then you get carbon credits and you get karma, and like, you get to be the good guy again. And that's really resonating with big parts of the solar world.
That's amazing. You've talked about the auditing aspect of the solar farms a little bit. Can you just give a kind of a high level overview of what that actually entails or what that looks like to ensure the integrity of the protocol?
Yeah. So an actual human being will go and visit each and every solar farm. And then there's like a very rigorous checklist made by a senior auditor out of KPMG of things that they have to do. So it actually does not take that much skill to be an auditor. There are a couple things you have to look for, but mostly it's about taking pictures, looking at legal docs, and applying this like formula to make sure this is a brand new solar farm. This solar farm was manufactured by, a real manufacturer, and the stats are trustworthy on the power it produces, that the panels are actually real, that the electricity is actually hooked up to the grid, and to figure out the usage pattern. And so you end up taking, I think it's around 100 pictures. And then these pictures get published to the internet. And so anyone who doesn't trust the auditor can actually just go and look at all the hard evidence that the auditor collected. And again, this isn't evidence being collected by the installer or the homeowner. It's being collected by a third party person. And so we tried very hard to make make this process as trustworthy as possible. And then it can be everything can be verified using satellite imagery, can be verified using weather data. And so if people are cheating, because solar panels are large and they require being seen by the sun, it's actually possible to use satellite data to pretty much confirm everything that's happening on the ground publicly without actually having to be there. So we do go there just to be extra sure, and we take tons of pictures. And so if something is fishy that the auditor misses, the community has plenty of opportunity to find it themselves. Or if someone gets suspicious a year later, we actually have a bunch of pictures from the day of, or from the first day, that we can use as reference points. And so the big thing about the way GLO is audited is again, our target is 5%. And so we know at some point there's going to be fraud that pops up, and our auditors are, you know, someone's going to get bribed or someone's going to miss something, and that's going to happen. But we're trying to keep that as small as possible and trying to prove as much as possible that, like, at least 95, maybe 99% of the energy produced by GLO is real and is trustworthy.
Well, and any sort of enhancement or improvement over and above what is currently going on in the world is obviously a major step in the right direction. So I think most people would be quite happy with such an uptick in actual verified improvements that are going on. I had one other question that you mentioned was sort of the homeowner angle in this. And so we talked about solar farms and specifically that being kind of a target use case, but is there a sort of a future world where people who are just installing solar on top of their house can engage in the GLO ecosystem or be able to actually sort of take what they're earning that maybe would go back to the grid and get the credit? Like, is there a world where individual homeowners could participate in the GLO protocol and the ecosystem as well?
Yeah, totally. So, and it actually often ends up being free. So what you can do, and GLO Solutions is one of the companies that does this. They're the like most ready at this point to handle homeowners. So what usually happens is GLO Solutions will check out your home. They'll look at historic power bills. They'll give you a quote, and the quote is normally something like, we can reduce your power bill by 40% and you'll earn this many tokens a month. GLO tokens a month, and you don't have to pay anything. We'll actually just finance the whole thing internally. And so instead of your power bill, instead of going to the, you know, utility, will go to us, but it's a smaller power bill, and you get tokens, and you get solar on your roof, and you get to be the good guy. And so in a lot of cases, it actually is just that simple. Sometimes it might cost you a little bit. It might be like $5,000 or $10,000. Depending on where you live and what your power situation is. Like, if you already have really cheap electricity, you might have to pay a little bit of extra money to put solar on top. Generally speaking, for most people in the United States, it's free to get solar, and you get GLO tokens as a part of it.
Wow. So for folks who have maybe been considering putting solar on their roof, this might be an opportunity for them to not only get it for next to nothing or maybe nothing, but be able to participate in the ecosystem as well. That's really cool. That's super exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. Well, are there other ways that people can get involved with what you guys are doing? Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts. There's the protocol level. There's all the other sort of components that are involved with the overall solution. But how can people that are interested and that they say, hey, this is something that I really passionately believe in, we want to help solve the climate crisis, how can they get involved with different aspects of what GLO is doing right now?
Yeah, so GLO is super early. We're just building out like the bare bones of the protocol and the infrastructure required to support the protocol. But the best place to go would be the Discord. So if you go to glolabs.org, there's a Discord link. You can jump in and join the community. There's a lot of people talking about, you know, some are getting solar on the roof, some are just helping like spread the message, some are taking time to learn and understand, and some are providing like useful feedback on the protocol design and the design of the audit standard that GLO uses. And so probably the best way to do that, or best way to contribute right now, kind of just from the sidelines, is to be in the Discord and to just talk about it and understand it more and kind of spread the word. Over time, what's actually going to be most beneficial is going to be either buying carbon credits yourself or selling like the place you work on being part of the Glow community and buying a carbon credit subscription. And so we're not quite ready for that. The network just has a couple solar farms. It doesn't really have that many carbon credits just yet. I promise that's changing. You know, solar farms are coming. And once the production is bigger, a big thing that you can do to help the world is just, you know, get the $5 a month subscription yourself and then sell other people and get them on board as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. We've covered so much in terms of the industry, how problematic it is, and all the things that you're doing to really make a dent in what is really an important problem that we all are experiencing or will experience if we haven't already. Is there anything else that you wanted to share just in terms of what you guys are building, in terms of what might be ahead that we haven't covered already?
I think we covered most of the basics. The big thing that we're focused on kind of in the near future is this Explorer. So another thing that like really bothers me about carbon credits is if you buy a carbon credit and then I buy a carbon credit from the same place, we're probably getting two completely different carbon credits. Like yours might be, you know, related to putting caps on oil wells. Mine might be related to cooking stoves. And we don't really know. And it's really difficult for us to track down like what exactly is the source of my specific carbon credit. And so one thing that we're going to be building over the next few months for Glow is a like carbon credit tracker where you punch in and you say, I have this carbon credit, and we'll look at your, you know, Ethereum wallet and say, oh, you have carbon credit number 5,450, that actually came out of, you know, Solar Farm 65 between the hours of 5 p.m. and, or no, it would be between the hours of like 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on, you know, December 19th. And so you get this like very specific, like this solar farm during this time period created the carbon credit with your serial number. And it's very easy for you to just connect your MetaMask wallet and then it's like, oh, okay, we know exactly where your stuff came from. And that's something that the carbon credit industry is lacking today. And I think would really like help people get excited about owning carbon credits is if they could see exactly where, you know, where their contributions came in.
Yeah, that's amazing. When could people expect for something like that to be publicly available? I don't want to hold you in any dates, but do you have like rough timelines?
I would say like probably March to April.
Okay.
Is when you could expect that.
Okay. That's awesome. I'm personally interested in being able to see that because we talk about it. We talked about it a couple times already. That is another big problem with it. You have no idea where some of these things are coming from. And so to bring that auditability in, I think is a huge game changer in and of itself.
Exactly.
Very good. Amazing. Well, David, I've learned so much. I'm really rooting for you guys. You guys have such a pragmatic approach. It's very intentional. It's thoughtful. And I think anybody that is familiar with the space or just, you know, cares about what you're trying to do is going to really appreciate that. And I'm excited that we got to share some of those components or aspects with our audience today. You mentioned Discord. Are there other ways or other places that folks should stay involved, should stay updated with what you're working on that we can drop? We'll make sure to link all of that below, obviously. But anywhere else that people should be paying attention?
Yeah, so glowlabs.org kind of has all the links. There's a mailing list, and then there's a Twitter, which is at glowfnd. If you want to follow me personally, I'm at David Warwick. You'll get my takes tend to be a little bit spicier than what maybe the foundation account is willing to tweet out. And yeah, I would say the mailing list, the Discord, and Twitter are probably the three main places. And then just pay attention to the website as more stuff comes up. You'll be able to hear about it there.
That's awesome. And we'll be sure to link all of that below. So we'll put the Discord website, Twitter links, et cetera, so folks can easily find that. Well, David, I wanted to say thank you again for coming on. You're not only very knowledgeable on the subject, but just given how long you've been in the space, it's really interesting to hear how you're pragmatically thinking about these things. It's often something that, you know, just as sort of an outsider looking in, you feel like there's a lot of those lessons learned that are sort of missed in the approaches that builders are taking. And so to hear about your pragmatism is quite incredible. And I think you guys have a very novel, but also quite effective approach that you're taking to this. So I wanted to say thank you again for coming on to chat about what you're building. We'll wrap it up there for everybody, but I will link all of that below. So go follow David, go follow all of their social handles so that you can stay involved. And as more information comes out, we'll be sure to share it. But we'll wrap it up for here. And David, want to say thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Take care.